You're listening to Comics with Kenobi!
And just remember, the ability to speak does not make one intelligent. Looking right at you, Jeff.
If there was ever a motto for podcasting, that would be it. Good grief.
I figured it was appropriate to use a Qui-Gon Jinn quote since we have our Qui-Gon Jinn one-shot this episode.
Yes, and yeah, if ever podcasting had a bumper sticker, that would be it. I have to remember that.
Oh yes.
So we do have a Qui-Gon Jinn comic this week. We got three books to discuss this week. We have Destroyer Down number 2 from IDW. Mm-hmm. We have Star Wars number 58, and we have Age of Republic,
mm-hmm.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yep, the first of the 27 one-shots that are all under the Star Wars Age of Banner. So we'll have 8 of these that are Age of Republic, and then I think then the next cycle will be Age of Rebellion, and then Age of Resistance. So, and each and every one is a one-shot, so that's kind of cool, actually, I think.
And if this issue is any indication, it's going to be some interesting storytelling.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we'll get deeper into this, obviously, once we get into our discussion about it, but I think that is the whole purpose of this. So, it's these one-and-dones, and it's going to give us some... unusual stories. I don't think every story is going to be awesome. There'll be hits and there will definitely be misses. Yes, and then there will be middle of the roads, kind of like this one was. So, but I digress. Ooh. How are you?
I'm good. We just finished up the second weekend of the Games Afoot at Runway Theater in Grapevine, Texas. If you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, you have 3 more chances to see the show that no critics are calling anything because we didn't get reviewed. The reviewers in the area sort of take the last part of December off, so a lot of Christmas shows don't get reviewed, which is fine because it's community theater, and I'm of two minds about community theater being reviewed in general. But we're having fun with it. That's the main thing. I'm good. How are you, Matt?
I am okay. Just getting prepped and ready for the holidays. Don't forget, we have a new episode of the Young Padawans version of the podcast out. It was released on December 10th, and we looked at Star Wars Adventures number 14 and number 15. So that's kind of cool. And then I was really happy about that.
Micah kind of took over.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's a great joke, wasn't it? That was a really funny joke Micah dropped on the podcast. So if you want to hear the joke, you have to listen to the podcast, but it's really funny. It's a groaner. It's a definite groaner. So it was funny watching Amy's face. You know, her face started to flush like, oh no. So I love doing the podcast with Emily and Micah and Amy. It's so much fun. It's a great time. But so that is out. News wise, not a great deal. First and foremost, Chris Rial, who had been the chief creative officer at IDW Publishing, which is the company that does Star Wars Adventures, left the company earlier this year. Well, guess what? He is back now as president, chief creative officer. He's got a lot of titles. He's coming back, and he is. He's president, publisher, and chief creative officer of the company now. And
what did he do while he was gone?
I believe he had gotten a job with Skybound. He had joined another company, but was not there for too long. And he was very pleased to be back. At IDW, because he'd worked at IDW for years.
Right.
Had grown with the company, and it was Skybound. Yeah, he was at Skybound, which is Robert Kirkman's company. The guy Robert Kirkman, of course, is the one who co-created The Walking Dead
and Invincible.
Yes, cannot forget Invincible, which is a great one.
I prefer to The Walking Dead personally. Not that you can really compare the two, but
that's
it's more my storytelling.
Well, that's not a problem. I mean, it's a great title. I really enjoyed it a lot. It really expanded the boundaries of sequential storytelling in superheroes. So, but
and
so
there's a TV show in the works for that one as well.
Why not? Why wouldn't there be?
So, anyway, carry on. Sorry.
So Chris is back, and you know, it's as you know, we you know is vowing, you know, new momentum going forward, which is always a good thing. And of course, you know, IDW has you know, it's a unit of IDW Media Holdings, and he, you know, they have been really good with a lot of the licensed publishing. You know, that includes titles like Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Star Trek, and of course now Star Wars. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to see what's going to happen here going forward, particularly as you know, IDW and Marvel are now kind of doing some publishing together. You know, most recently, Delilah Dawson, who wrote the Phasma novel.
Yes.
She has got a new monthly series about Spider-Man. It's called Marvel Action Spider-Man New Beginnings. And first issue was out last week, I believe, and it's awesome. It's really, really good. So we might see, you know, we might see some more, you know, some sort of team ups with Marvel and IDW in this vein. What this portends for the Star Wars comics, I cannot say. I mean, IDW's done a really good job with Star Wars Adventures. They've had a couple of delays sometimes. I mean, for example, issue number 16 was supposed to be out this week, but it will be out next week. So, but you know, it's all there. It's all good, and I don't see, you know, IDW losing the Star Wars license anytime soon. So
not at all.
It should be pretty good. Other than that, speaking of Star Wars comics, the top 100. If you will, for of all comics sold, and I'm doing air quotes, via the Diamond tallies, found that again, there were no Star Wars comics in the top 30 during November. However, just barely, Darth Vader number 23 came in at 32, followed by Star Wars number 56 at 35, and then Star Wars 57 at 42, with Darth Vader 24 at number 43. Han Solo Imperial Cadet number 1 came in at number 70. That's actually a pretty good showing. I was impressed. I did not think it would chart that high, or that, you know, I didn't think it would make the top 100. I was glad that it did. And then Dr. Aphra number 26 came in at number 82. So we'll have the full list after we have published this podcast, but it will be on the Comics with Kenobi Twitter feed, as well as the Comics with Kenobi Facebook page. So
much better showing than last month.
It is. So, I'm you know, again, you know, the lack of a book in the top 30 is a bit distressing, but you know, there's a lot of comics in the market.
Right.
So,
yeah. And, you know, no new movie coming out this Christmas season to, you know, support or promote the comics. Incidentally, I found out today that the score for Solo, A Star Wars Story is not being considered for Academy Award nominations, because it was submitted too late.
Oh,
submitted past the deadline. So somebody dropped the ball there.
That's horrible. Yeah. Well, I love that soundtrack. It's so good.
Too. It's a lot of fun.
It's one of the ones I listened to it in Rogue One quite often, actually.
Yeah. And some non-comics news. I'm sure you probably heard about this. I'm just excited about it. Sidebar. Warner Brothers announced that they are working on, in the early stages of, a Plastic Man movie. Did you hear about that?
I did. I'm excited about this.
I'm very excited. I was talking to somebody about it, and it was like, who would play Plastic Man? And I said, you know, I'd almost like for it to be an unknown, somebody we don't know. Because, you know, the obvious choice everybody's going to think of would be Ryan Reynolds, because it's, you know, Plastic Man's kind of a goofy character, but he is Deadpool. So I'm thinking I would much rather it be somebody that we didn't know, because I can't think of anybody who would. And then immediately, the perfect choice to play Plastic Man popped into my head.
Wait, let me guess. Jim Carrey.
No.
All right, home.
Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
Think about it. Put him in the goggles with his hair, and he's got the comedic chops for it.
Oh, definitely.
So it is tangentially Star Wars related. I think I need to start a petition.
I think you should.
Because
I think you definitely should.
I think he could play the hell out of that part. Anyway,
and
I think,
and if you don't think Oscar Isaac can do a superhero, then I would suggest you go see Into the Spider-Verse when it comes out this coming Friday. You will be pleasantly surprised.
Oh, he voices one of the characters?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe he does.
Maybe that's why
Maybe
I'm
he
going to be
doesn't.
surprised, right? So, oh,
Go see that movie though. If you're on the fence about going to see that movie, don't be. Get off that fence and get over to the theater as fast as you can. I saw it this past weekend. Was floored by how good it was. It is a love letter to Spider-Man and to comics. And it is thoroughly entertaining from the first scene to the final scene. And by that I mean post-credit scene.
because it
If
is
you know what
Marvel.
I mean.
Yeah. Excellent.
Post-credit scene.
Excellent. Can't wait. I can't wait to see it.
You're gonna have to. You're gonna love it.
Excellent.
Shall we dive into the comics for this
Well,
week?
before we do, and I promise folks we are going to get the comics, I would like to say I mentioned last week that Matt had generously sent me a copy of Silverado on Blu-ray to watch. I have since seen it.
And
I have to say, I don't really get what the big deal is.
oh, come
I'm
on.
kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It is officially in my top five westerns of all time.
It's so good,
And
isn't
that's
it?
rarefied air because I love westerns. It is a phenomenal film. Maybe my favorite Kevin Kline performance. And it's strange because you think about Kevin Kline and it's a very subdued role, but everything he does is just so real that it just really impressed me. So, yeah, very much enjoyed it. If you're like me and it slipped through the cracks for you, give Silverado a watch, especially if you like westerns. Gorgeous cinematography, terrific acting, music is wonderful. I just can't recommend it enough. So thank you, Matt, for helping me fill a gap in my knowledge.
You are more than welcome. I was glad to help.
So yeah, I guess we should talk about some comics since this is a comic podcast.
Let's do that because our first one is Destroyer Down number 2 from IDW Publishing. Again, just to give you a quick back, some backstory in case you missed the last episode. This was the Loot Crate exclusive graphic novel that you could only get if you subscribe to the Loot Crate. So about 500,000 copies were shipped, making it the best-selling Star Wars comic of that year,
Possibly all time.
technically. So, well, no, not all time, because Star Wars number one,
Good point.
still had almost about 1 million copies sold. But still, it was a big deal. But since it didn't go through Diamond, it didn't get charted that way. But it's nice, though, that IDW has brought it back around for this three volume or this three issue reprint, and that's essentially where we find ourselves. It's a two part, there's two stories, much like the Star Wars Adventures lineup, a main story and a backup story. Main story is called Destroyer Down, imagine that, and it's written by Scott Beatty with art by Derek Charm and letters by Tom B. Long. Editors on this one are Peter Adrian Berevesh and Elizabeth Bry, Bobby Kurnow and Denton J. Tipton. The second story is The Ghost Ship, Part 2, also written by Scott Beatty, but penciled by John Somarriva, inked by Sean Parsons, colored by Matt Herms, and of course, lettered by Tom B. Long. I love me some consistency in lettering. And this opens up from where we last left off. In the first story, we are on Jakku. Rey is about to be beset upon by another group of scavengers with some familiar faces, if you will, because she is inside an interdictor called the Spectral, which has crashed on Jakku.
And can we just say I love
And this.
this opening image of these four guys descending down here because they even gave us a J.J. Abrams lens flare on this page.
They did, didn't they?
I love it. Love it so much. And yeah, this is great. This is them descending down and that they figure out that the ship is powering up. And even what's his name, Unkar Plutt is watching, and he says the ghost ship, it's alive, as one of the guys falls down into it, and he says to himself, Rey brought her back, and she'll bring whatever she finds back to me, if she knows what's good for her.
Yeah, because remember the setup here is Unkar Plot has essentially unleashed everybody to find this, and Rey found it first. Because this, we're talking not just one quarter portion, but many thousands of full portions. So,
For a while on that.
and that's where we cut back in, as you say, and because there's Rey inside, she's like, what was that? All right, now let's assess the situation, Rey. It's not a bottomless pit, it's a corridor, and she's hanging from a rope, if you will, swaying back and forth. Really, really long corridor. And we get, look at that. It's a
An
mech.
astromech, yeah.
Z2, Z2. Look, my
Or
little droid.
Zeet, as he prefers to be called, that we find out later.
Yep. Look, my little droid friend, I'm going to need you to dispense with introductions and worry instead about opening the door right next to you. Open all the doors if you must. That's a nice little callback. Remind you of anything? Open all of them. All of them.
Oh, yeah. Shut them all down.
So, listen to me. Open all the doors and I will help you. And Zeet's like, all right, I'm down with that. He opens them all up. And then I love this line. That's a good astromech droid. What say we air out this dusty old Star Destroyer a bit?
And they start opening up the hatches. And, of course, two of the three guys that are left are convinced that the Imperial ghosts know that they're here. And one of them, of course, says, you fools, there are no ghosts. And we hear all of this noise, and the ghosts are rattling their chains. The door opens, and we see it's a bunch of buckets, a bunch of Stormtrooper helmets just fall out on top of them. Which
oh
is
yes,
hilarious.
And it's, you know, and it's, of course, you know, this is Sarko Plank. You know, he's a Maletto who, you know, whom we, you know, just we've seen before. You know, so, I mean, because, you know, he was, you know, he was he did business in Nima Outpost on Jakku, and in I believe it was in one of the Before the Force Awakens novels. I think it was. He was in one of the Luke Skywalker stories. He was a Tomb Raider. So, and he was, you know, he played a role in that book with Luke Skywalker. So it's nice to see Sarko back in action, as it were.
Yes, agreed. And so they get, you know, fairly frightened by all of this. And we cut back to Rey, and she's figured out what's going on. And she says, I can tell you this, Z2, very well. I'll call you Zeet if that's what you prefer. Which, I love that they just, the little time we were with this guy, they give him some personality. Says, now I can tell you that blasting our way into a wrecked Star Destroyer is just asking for trouble. And she swings her way inside just in time for all of them to fall past her.
She's about
to swing herself inside. Yeah, and she actually has to grab onto Zeet. Yep. And crawls her way up. And she says, so with those bright flashy colors, you don't strike me as an Imperial astromech. Oh, you're a rebel then. And he tries to hand her a She says, of course, no doubt a saboteur from the grand old days of the Rebellion, all those tales of immortal Jedi warriors and planet-sized Death Stars and top-secret plans. And, yeah, he gives her an interface key. She says, no, you keep it. We'll figure out a way to get you. And she says, stay with me. Switch your auxiliary power cells to keep those mag feet stuck to the bulkhead. And he just lets go. And falls, powers down, and falls.
He's done his job. He has vouchsafed and safeguarded the plans. Or the interface key, and he's passed it on to somebody. Again, I think that's part of the mystique of Rey is, you know, she's a good person, and even droids can determine that. I mean, look what we saw with BB-8 in the Force Awakens. So it just makes perfect sense for this to happen.
You know, they always say that the astromechs are kind of like the dogs of the Star Wars universe.
And, yeah, that's a high compliment.
Dogs know good people, so yeah.
That is a great compliment, actually.
And I love that Rey says, I was just getting used to the company, and now I'll just be talking to myself. It was not as if I haven't been forced to narrate my own thrilling adventures before, which we saw we've seen before in this book. And Rey of Jakku, peerless plunderer, scavenger above all scavengers. Having outpaced the scum and villainy of Nima Outpost, Rey has descended into the dark depths of the lost Star Destroyer Spectral to find all the riches of the Fallen Empire's sick bay. And I love that reveal. It's a bunch of Bacta tanks. And she says, Unkar Plot won't pay for moldy Bacta long past its expiration date. And she finds a hologram.
And then that's what the interface key is, isn't it?
Yes.
And she sparks it up. And I'm no Luke Skywalker, but I'll take this destroyer down with all hands aboard if it's the last thing I do. And of course, you know, the other scavengers see this. A ghost. Fool. This is Sarko again. Fool. Don't you know a hollow when you see one? Sarko, no! Blasters! Ow! And he
shoots Rey right in the arm.
Not nice. Not nice at all. You know, of course, what was that girl? Was it the ghost treasure? You witless thugs. It was the ghost. It was the ghost. It was the ghost.
And of course, he said, and Sarko says, grab onto something. Because she just, he says, but shouldn't we follow? He says, a risk tumbling through the bowels of the ship, the upended ship, and breaking our necks like poor Belchar. So he shoots up above them to just and throws all, it destroys all the Bacta. And she basically rides it down.
She does, but thankfully, you know, the interface is still sound. So, and I imagine it could survive probably being inundated in water, or you know, or back to fluid. So.
Right. And I love this. She says, they say on Jakku you can suffer any death except imaginable, except one. And we know where she's going. She says, you can dry up from thirst in the open desert. You can weaken and wither from a belly that's never ever full. You can make enemies of wanted men who just don't like you. But drowning on a wretched sandpit like Jakku, that would never happen. I love this. She says, looks like that Bacta wasn't spoiled after all. My wound is already healing. So her arm, they shot her in the arm, but just being in the Bacta for that small amount of time started the regenerative process.
Moldy back to pace my bottom.
So good to know that it lasts a while.
Yes, it does.
And she says, now what, Ray? Why would you possibly risk your life further for the sake of a few crumbs from greedy, grumpy Unkar Plutt? And then she says, why indeed? But it's the letter Y, because she's looking at the remains of a broken down Y-wing.
That's almost, with the exception of one engine, pretty much complete. And it
Yeah.
looks like it's resting on a bed of TIE fighter
It
panels.
is. That's awesome.
So, yeah, and of course, that's what we get, to be continued. And I do love that line, why indeed? So now we go to the backup story, which is the ghost ship part two. And clearly, we know now that this ghost ship is the ship that Rey is on. So this is sort of the before. Rey is the after. The ghost ship is the before. So, and this is part two, and it's called Lost Shepherd. And here we are, you know, it's the Imperials fleeing a fight like whimpering pups. Sir, the rebels, one of their snub fighters dares to pursue us. And look at that, it's a Y-wing. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate this because this is an all ages book, but this is some pretty complicated storytelling they're doing. They're showing us the story, basically telling us one story in non-chronological order.
Yes, they are. And you know, and it's I like, you know, one of the things that always sticks in my craw is, you know, when people discuss Star Wars adventures, you know, there was one group I was just kind of perusing through about Star Wars comics on Facebook, and somebody had said, yeah, well, they don't really have a whole lot of detail, and you know, it's just fluff. And you know, it took all I had to not respond, because you know, these books are not fluff. You know, these are, yes, they're targeted at an all ages audience. But that's for good reason. I mean, you know, this story has a visceral appeal, no matter what your age is. And you know, here's the important thing is, it's a good story.
Absolutely.
It's very entertaining. So, and but I digress again, you know, because you know, this is setting it up. So we have the pilot with Zeet, and we now see what's going on from, you know, both vantages of the rebellion and the Empire. And I like this, you know, again, I'm no Luke Skywalker. And of course, and because this is where he says, you know, start spooling the internal holo log now, okay? I'm no Luke Skywalker, but I'll take this destroyer down if it's the last thing I do. Sound familiar?
Yeah,
It
and so yeah,
should.
we're seeing this happen
In real
in
time.
real time, and on board the ship, the commander says, "Rear gunners, what are you waiting for? Blast that rebel pilot to atoms!" And they point out to him, "We're at light speed, Admiral Traz." Sorry, it's the admiral, not the commander. He says, "It's not possible to fire in transit. Backlash from the cannons would tear the ship apart." And
And
the
I
pilot
guess
says,
it looks like, I guess it looks like the Y-wing is sort of, you know, stuck in the
He's sort of stuck in their, I guess, jet wash, for lack of a better word.
their hyperspace wake.
He got sucked. He's the one that got sucked in from the Shepherd crew. And one of the officers says, "Admiral, we may have an issue. We have a substantial breach on the experimental weapons array. There's no telling what losing it might do to hull integrity while traveling at light speed." And he says, "Distance to Jakku, we've arrived. Good. Full stop." And so they stop, and here's we find out Bak Rychuk is the last member, he thinks, maybe of Shepherd Squadron, a New Republic fighter wing out of Rat Attack, really? And he says, "If anyone finds this recording, please know that I did not run away from the battle and abandon my flock. I'm following the fight as best I can, even if I have to limp along with one engine." And here we see him lose one engine, which we saw the results of that. He says, "I'll follow the Spectral all the way to Wild Space." And so the Admiral tells him to turn on the tractor beam, so they bring him in, and he says, Bak says, "Reroute all auxiliary power to the remaining thruster. Give it everything." And this is what's causing the problem. And they say, sir, experimental weapons array number four, what? If it's a problem, simply shut it down now. So, sir, the focusing dome has apparently been breached by debris from the rebel fighter. So his engine is going to be the thing that takes him down. They say, we need to power down the entire destroyer to prevent a system-wide overload. And I love this because we see it just falling. We see the lightning sparks around it and everything. And Back tells Zeet to keep recording. If I can't sink this ship from the outside, I'll do it from within. Zeet, what's happening? I didn't hit it that hard as they're going down. And he says, did I? And I love this pose. He struck like a hero's pose there with his gun, looking at all these stormtroopers. And they're all trying to figure out what's going on because the ship is just going down.
Yeah, it's going into a nosedive. And of course, they're still in space, you know, so the whole notion of what's up is down or what's down is up is in play here. But clearly, the Spectral is done for. She's dying. This is her final dive, if you will.
And I'm assuming we'll see the end of that next time because we get it to be continued. So we'll find out next month
happened
with that. So I'm really enjoying this. This is a lot of fun, and you know, like I said, this is not fluff storytelling. Whoever said that has a strange idea about what constitutes fluff, I suppose.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. It's a solid story. Also, I thought what a solid story was Star Wars number 58, which is where, you know, this is basically, I call this the Luke beefcake issue.
But is that Luke on the cover? Because one of my first notes is Luke does not look like Luke on the cover. I know it's Luke, but it doesn't look like Luke.
It's Luke. I mean, look at the jacket. That's the jacket. So it's what he's been wearing since the start of the series.
Oh, I know it is, but just the face doesn't look like Luke.
Oh, I like it though. It's a nice little representation here.
I do. I love the color and everything, and I love this pose that they're in. It's very, very nice.
Yeah. That's Luke and Tula, and of course that cover artist is Jamal Campbell. This is the Escape Part 3, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Anuel Unzueta. Colors are by Guru EFX. Letters are by VC's Clayton Coles. The variant cover artists were John Tyler Christopher, I believe it was Nyan Nub was the action figure variant. And then Rod Rice had his Galactic Icons cover, and that was BB-8. Tom Groneman is the assistant editor. Mark Panaccia is the editor. And we are, again, like I said, part three. You know, the last story arc was Hope Dies. This is the escape. We've got Luke, Han, and Leia are trapped, if you will, on Hooban and are unable to get off thanks to Hooban's isolationist philosophy. And they are in the care and hospitality of Thane Marcona. And Thane Marcona is obviously, from what we've gleaned in the last issue, very much a warrior and does not shy away from a fight, but has clearly had a history of conflict, and he is enjoying his retirement, if you will. So, and this opens up where we left off. You know, they are being attacked by Thanrax, which are just these really massive sort of
wolf bears.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. they're like just like an overarching, amped up version of wargs from the Lord of the Rings. And you know, Luke is standing there and if we recall last issue, he had kind of made a motion to sort of grab for his lightsaber, and he's like, nope, can't do that, you know, we don't want to tip our hands here. But Thane, not much gets past Thane, you know, because yeah. Thane is running off going, if I'm not mistaken, that's a lightsaber hiding in your jacket, just a trinket you picked from some junk pile, or can you use it? I like this. Both.
Yeah, Luke's response is perfect. Says, then let's see it. And I love it. He says, we have unfortunates to save from the ravening Thanrax. And so he did, and I love this because this next shot, the Thanrax has a guy's leg in his mouth.
Chomp.
and Thane jumps at it, and we see him whistling something. And he cuts it across the neck, and Luke says, did you just warn the monster? And he says, of course, as I said, you have to be sporting.
I like his sense of fair play. And, of course, he says that you have to be sporting, and they're surrounded by four more.
Right. The one has fallen, but there's four more that have descended upon them. And so they both go after him. And Thane tells him, careful, you only wounded it. It'll run wild.
And there it goes.
Headed toward the village. So Luke just can't get out of his own way.
Yeah, but you know, Luke is still young and inexperienced. You know, he's building up experience points, if you will, to use a D&D metaphor. So he grabs a hold of the beast as it runs off, and I love this line here from Thane.
I
That was considerably more dashing than I expected. Of course,
know.
what makes it perfect is the way he's whipping his hair.
Right.
So
And so then we get Han and Leia share another moment
yes,
as
yes.
they're having a meal.
And I just want to say, this is one of my favorite parts of this book is the dialogue between Han and Leia, because they're sort of dancing that, doing this odd little dance involving subtlety and not really copping to the fact that they like each other out
Yeah,
loud.
they're just circling one another.
They are, and there's a lot of witty banter, which translates to sarcasm. It's just kind of cool. But it's, I think this page is very revealing because it gives us a side of Princess Leia that we haven't really seen. I think we have, because she's, well, I don't know, because, with the death of Alderaan and the destruction of Alderaan, she has still been duty bound to protect the rebellion and serve the rebellion. It's not like she has viewed it as a personal crusade to destroy the empire. It's just part of, the death of her home world was just one of the many cogs that propels her story forward. But this line here, I thought was rather telling, because Han asks, "So why ask Marcona if you could have a private terminal?" Just thinking, planning. You know me. After the disaster of Mako Ta, Queen Trios of blasted Shu Torun left me a whole lot to chew over. And again, so she is always
Always
thinking.
thinking and planning, plans within plans.
Yes, indeed,
And this next moment is actually my favorite. She says, "You know, this is surprisingly pleasant." And Han says, "The meal or the company?" And she says, "Let's say both."
And the look on Han's face that Anwell has drawn here, I really enjoy this a lot. Now, it's kind of funny because there was the usual grief on Twitter about tracing.
Right.
Anwell does not trace. He finds a style and he sticks to it. And somebody had cited the fact, well, Leia looks just like she did in the last issue. So, well, isn't that the point?
Right.
Have some continuity, have some consistency. It's awesome. So, again, this is going to be a debate that will always be plaguing Star Wars books. Indeed, I think any licensed title, anyone who draws a licensed title is always going to be damned if they do or damned if they don't.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, I like how he draws this. I like the look on Leia's face. And then, of course, Han responds with, "I hate to ruin the moment by suggesting there's anything in common between a smuggler and royalty, but I was thinking the same thing. When was the last time we had a quiet meal? Thranrax!
And I love his responses. Never. We've never had a quiet meal. Ever. And they open the door and just says, "Oh, Luke." And we see Luke just hanging on to this thing. And I could just kind of see this playing out in real time. And it would be hilarious.
It would be very funny. It's a very jocular moment, and they capture it really nicely, I think. Just anything from, the way the lines are drawn in the middle panel, to show the speed that's taking place, to the people being shunted aside by the beast as it runs down the lane, and then the look on Luke's face at the bottom where he's like, "Oh no."
Because he realizes Tula is apparently about to cross the street, so he tells her to look out. He says, "You have to hold on." It's Luke, and he stabs the
The
beast
lights.
down through its head, and it throws him off.
Yeah.
And
and of course he loses his lightsaber.
I love Han's immediate response is, "Nice move." He's like, "Luke, show off in front of the girl." Classic. He says, "Please, you really aren't making this easy." And Tula picks up the lightsaber and says, "A lightsaber, Luke? It's very pretty. It reminds me of my grandmother's." And so now Tula becomes yet another non-Jedi to do so. And I wrote in my notes, sigh, because I hate to sound like an old guy, but this is the one time that I sound like a grumbling fan. I always liked it that Han was the only non-Jedi that we saw wield a lightsaber.
Well,
And
all right.
I get that we can't have that. I get that it's got yeah, it's that's not the only time it's happened and everything. I just missed the days when he was the only one, because it just made him that much cooler. But
Well, that's fair enough, but also, she's the granddaughter of a Jedi
she
Knight.
is, she is. And I love this that we find all of this out about her. And Luke says, "Your grandmother was," she says, "you were magnificent, quite simply magnificent." This whole thing just sounds vaguely, vaguely post, Trist, Tristel, if you will. And she walks away, and Luke just says, "Please, Han, just please don't say anything." And so she sends the other guys out after it, and Thane says, "You know, I'll ready the mounts and pursue." And he says, "Thank you for your help, Luke. Such verve. A man like you will find much to do during your stay on Hubin." And this is where Luke has decided he's had enough. He's like, I have so many people relying on me. He sounds like Leia used to me.
He does, doesn't he?
And so Luke he's ready to leave, but Han brings up good sauce, which seems like an odd thing to bring up. But he says, "You have to try the bar food. You're from a Tatooine, a place without enough moisture to make a good sauce." And Leia says, "I'm not sure that's going to change his mind, but there are worse places to be stuck." And I love that Thane says, "Luke, though, I have to say, Luke, your opening was a little high. We can work on that. I'll help. If you're stuck here, you may as well learn something, eh?" And I love this image of them, the five of them walking off just in a shadow. It's just gorgeous.
It is.
That final panel there on that page.
It's done quite nicely. And then, of course, that's where we cut to the next page, where we are later. And, and Thane and Luke are sparring. And it's impressive. You know, because think about it. You know, Luke didn't really have much sparring to do with Obi-Wan, except for what we saw in the Falcon.
And I like this because it's filling in some gaps in his training.
It is. It very much so is. Because remember, he's had no formal training whatsoever. You know, before these comics came, since the new canon, you know, it was like very little except what he was probably just exploring himself. And so we have seen him get his training in dribs and drabs since issue one.
Right. Yeah. And so I do like the exchange that they have as they're fighting. And he tells him, you know, "You're making a lot of progress." And Luke says, "Dueling with a live lightsaber still seems risky." He says, "It is, but learning to use a lightsaber with anything other than a lightsaber is a waste of time. The plasma blade is only like itself." He says, "We'll pick up tomorrow. You know enough about attack, but a well-planned retreat can be a thing of beauty." And I love this image of Luke sneaking into his whatever, wherever he's going.
Yes, I like that. And then, there we are.
And 3PO is in a hover chair.
Isn't that great? And you know, again, a nice side of Luke here, you know, because Luke is very, very made it very clear to Han and Leia that he wants to get off of Hoopin. You know, he wants to get back with the rebellion and, you know, and continue the good fight. And of course, you know, he walks in and we, you know, C-3PO lays down the exposition, if you will. "Are you sure you could build a transmitter out of our components? It doesn't seem at all likely." "No, but I've got to try. Staying here for months, I just can't." "And, sir, what are you doing?" "Oh, MK-1. Clearly working on some manner of transmitter, if I can be so bold, in a clearly inexpert way. I do believe I have some tools and some plans in storage. Perhaps I can be of some assistance." And of course, this is music to C-3PO's ears. "Of course you can, you wonderful droid. I told you we should have asked him. He is the perfect host."
And I'm immediately suspicious, yeah, of this.
Yeah, but see, I was kind of, but, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this is within him. This is his protocol. But we don't know. I mean, because there's still a lot of unanswered questions here. You know, there's questions that they don't know about this world and these people.
Right, exactly. And so 1 week later, Han and Luke are just lounging on the grass.
You did it wrong. 1 week later.
Sorry. 1 week later. Han and Luke are lounging on the grass, and Leia comes out, and Luke says, "Finally coming out from your room in time to catch the sunset?" And she says, "I was just thinking, and isn't it Han's job to tease me?" And he says, "Sorry, I'm still not used to this place. It's like being stuck back home, but green." And he says, "And knowing Darth Vader is out there, and he could," and Han says, "Didn't Tula ask you to go for a definitely not romantic walk?" And Luke had forgotten, and he runs off. And Han says, "I hate to wish this on anyone, but 6 months as a trooper would have left him a hell of a lot more organized."
Which is kind of cool. Yeah. Because this sets up really something intriguing, I thought. You know, because we get a nice little callback, you know, to Solo, a Star Wars story. You know, Leia says, "I still can't believe you were a stormtrooper." You know, and then we get that backstory. You know, "I enlisted to fly TIE fighters so I could get off Corellia. Ended up discharged all the way down to the infantry." "Yeah, but I can't imagine you marching with a haircut." "Hey, I didn't say I was any good at being a trooper. I didn't have many options, and there was a girl." "Well, of course there was. Well, it wasn't like that, believe it or not, but it was a big mistake. Me and women have always been messes. Hell, you've met Sana.
And I love this. He gets real here.
He does, very much so.
And he says, I just hope if I keep on going long enough, I'll learn enough to not crash anything worth a damn. That'd be nice. And Leia even says, what's this? I see emotions. I like this Han Solo. He says, it's all just Han Solo. A place like this slows a guy down. No other option but to sit still, and it all just comes leaking out. This place is good for me, but it's driving the kid wild. And so it truly is.
And again, I really like how, you know, Kieran threaded these different threads from the movies into this one page. And it flowed in a really nice manner, I thought. Of course, I do want to vent a little on this one, though. Because after this issue came out, of course, what was the big topic of all the sites talking about the Star Wars comic? Han Solo as a stormtrooper has now been canonized by the comics. I was like, no, Han Solo as a stormtrooper was canonized by Solo, a Star Wars story, the movie. Come on, you missed the picture here. The fact that he's opened up and talked to Leia about it, that's the important deal here.
But
that's
no.
What threads Solo, a Star Wars story, into this comic and into the original trilogy. It's a small thing, and I shouldn't be nitpicking.
No, but you're
am.
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The movie, it was canon because it was in the movie. The comic is just referencing it. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, missing the forest for the trees.
Exactly. So Lisa Dullard, you are vindicated. So all right. So yeah, back to this. Yeah, as Han says, Hooban is driving the kid wild. And that's where we get a nice little segue to Luke and Tula taking that nice walk.
and again, this is where we learn more about her grandmother being a Jedi. And she tells Luke, Tula says, your every action here has proven your character. I want to share. I trust you. You're very trustworthy. You radiate it. It is a gift most unusual. And he says, when you speak to me like that, you make me feel like more like a farm boy than ever. I have no idea how to talk to you. He says, you talk by simply talking. You trust your heart to guide you. And so she takes him back to the graveyard, for lack of a better term. She says, I'm told my grandmother said you should always be guided by your heart. It's the force speaking to you. And she says, of all the things that fight us being on Hooban, I fear weeds are the most persistent. And this is where Luke says, so your grandmother was a Jedi. And she tells him the story about she fell in love with a roguish stranger. She and the Order went their separate ways, and I have nothing but respect for the Jedi, but the Jedi are not the Force, and the Force moves me.
Yes! That is the best line of this book.
It's great. I love it, and it says everything about the Jedi Order, I feel like.
It does, and you know, and it's great because this line, I think, once having read this line, and once we start discussing the Qui-Gon one-shot, this line takes on even more relevance.
Yes, absolutely. I agree, 100%. And so she tells him this, you know, the story about how her grandmother, you know, settled here on Hooban with her grandfather, and that's why her dad, Thane, decided to come back here.
Yep. After they died, my father left here. He founded a mercenary company. He met my mother, and shortly after, along I came. She was a field technician. She died on a mission. She had left father a message in her will. This is no life for our daughter. See, I am dead. It is no life at all. You talked about your happy childhood. I wish I had that. Give her that. Give all the Marcona clan that. And the clan agreed, she says. They were aging. Retirement was appealing. One more mission and then out. The mission made this world our private property. We settled here and lived in peace. Perhaps too much in peace. The first generation of children are coming of age. Some are restless to leave. And Luke responds, oh, I know what that feels like. And he does.
Absolutely.
I mean, they are two peas in a pod, different lifestyles and different upbringings, different worlds, different experiences. But ultimately, they're both driven by the pangs of youth to get out, go out beyond, and explore. There's more out there. You know, I hate you, Mom. I hate you, Dad. I'm leaving.
Can't wait to get out. Can't wait to move away.
Can I borrow 20 credits?
And I love this whole thing. And this is where she reveals to him that she's the one who told MK to help with the transmitter.
Ah.
But she hopes Luke won't use it.
But she's giving Luke a choice.
Yeah. It's an interesting character. It's a very interesting character. She's saying, I want to give you the option to use it, but I really hope that you won't.
I like her. I hope she sticks around. I don't think she will, but I hope she does.
I just hope we don't find out that she's nefarious.
No, that would be a... I wouldn't put it past Kieran Gillen to do that, though.
I know, but she says, all I ask of you is to think before you do something you can't take back. Which is not always Luke's strong suit.
No.
But,
Luke is rash. He is impulsive sometimes.
And we see it a lot in this next scene. He and Han and Leia are sitting around a table, and he says, I've got an idea to get off this world, but it's risky. And Leia says, not yet, Luke, and he immediately just explodes on her. Says, really, not yet? More time to sit in your room? What's wrong with you? I don't get it. And Han tries to calm him down, and she says,
hey,
I'm not...
Kid.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, take it down a gear. And he's upset.
He's
pissed.
Upset. And he says, after Mako Ta, I didn't think you'd get scared. And she says, I'm not scared, Luke. It's complicated. I just need a little more time. And just like Poe Dameron in The Last Jedi, he doesn't trust leadership. I says, sure, and we all know what the Empire does with time. Only took them one day to destroy Alderaan. How many days have we given them by sitting here? Which is a low blow. And he leaves with R2, walks past Tula, and I like this moment of them passing one another, and he looks back and tells R2 to power up the transmitter. We can't waste any more time.
Yeah, but let's go back to the top of this page. I mean, that's a bold move by Luke to R2, with me, now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's sort of out of character for him at this point, but I guess he is becoming who he is.
Well, that's fed up farm boy.
Right. That's Tashi Station to pick up power converters, Luke.
That is. That's Uncle Owen. You know, that's I'm tired of my uncle, you know, he's held me back. You know, I should have gone to the academy before the last harvest. So you have to remember, Luke is a young man. He's not the wise Jedi master that, you know, he grows into. You know, he's not the person that we saw, he's still impetuous. He's still emotional. He's not who we saw in Return of the Jedi. You know, he doesn't have any training. He doesn't, you know, he only knows of the Jedi of what Ben told him to glean during the adventures in this volume of Star Wars. So it's, you know, we have to sometimes step back and realize that and reconcile the fact that this is a side of Luke that we haven't seen yet because it has never been really explored.
That's very true. No, it's very true.
I got real deep there, didn't I?
You did. You did. Yeah, real deep. I was having to swim my way back to the top.
Sorry, man. Space smooches. Okay. Space smooches.
Yeah, or that's what Han thinks is going to happen. He and Leia are walking along, and she invites him into her room. And I immediately thought, what? And Han says, I thought you'd never ask. And I love that he starts to take his vest off. And then he says, what the hell is that supposed to be? She goes, isn't it obvious? It's how we're going to destroy Shuteroon forever. And inside Leia's room, of course... She's got a hologram with the plans, and she's got schematics on the wall, everything. That's what she needs time to do. She's formulating a plan,
uh-huh.
And she's using the solitude here to do it. And I don't know why this didn't surprise me at all. She opened the door. I was like, what's going to be in there? And I looked, and I said, oh, of course. And I love that lightning flash outside the window behind.
Yeah, that was nice very touch. Hammer-esque. So
the plot thickens.
Very much so, and then some.
And then the cover for next issue makes me very, very excited about it. It's a very Old West High Noon showdown type image of Han squaring off with someone.
And it looks intriguing. I'm curious to see what the next issue is going to entail. I wonder who he is, facing off against.
Maybe we haven't met them yet, but yeah, really, really good connective tissue for this. A lot happened in this one.
It did, didn't it? I mean, you know, for
it crammed
for
a lot into this book.
For a low-key arc, you know, sort of a kind of a, all right, you know, the last arc was so intense, we got to take a breather. This one is moving along at a very steady pace. You know, and we're learning a lot about these three individuals than we have before.
We really are.
You know, and I think what's happening is we're sort of being forced to, not forced, but I think, you know, what we're being given the opportunity here to learn more about the events that have made them into the people that we know them to eventually become.
Right. And we're this is the time where we slow down and breathe and kind of learn a little bit more about the characters that we're spending time with.
Jeff,
What?
breathe. Just breathe.
I can do that.
See? Got a Last Jedi reference in there. Breathe. Just breathe. Wake up!
Okay, I'm working on it. So for our last book this week, we have The Age of Republic, Qui-Gon Jinn. Now, this is issue number one. Is this going to be one of 27, or is each of these going to be just a number one since they're all one-shots?
They're all one-shots, so they will all be number ones, but there will be a total of 27 titles.
Good grief.
And so these will be running all the way through September of next year. And, of course, you know, the upshot is that every, you know, each month has, you know, there's two issues a month, or no, wait, hold on here. Well,
it'll be three issues a month that they're
no, because they're pairing off. Because like this month we get we have Qui-Gon Jinn, and then we have Darth Maul, and then because we also get like then when we get like Obi-Wan and Jango Fett, then there's a you know an age you know an Age of Republic special. So essentially, it's you know for there will be one issue focused on a good guy, or you know, and one issue focused on you know one issue focused on the hero, one issue focused on the villain. So, and this will unfold over 27 issues. It's never been done, at least not by Marvel. It's intriguing. And I am curious to see how it's going to go. It's, and the notion is that, you know, to give, basically, you know, take these certain characters, these specific characters, and break them up, if you will, break them down with, you know, individual stories. You know, hopefully with the aim being to shed new light on these particular characters. So, and of course, all of Age of Republic, all of those are being written by Jody Hauser. All of the Age of Rebellion are being written by Greg Pak. And all of the Age of Resistance are being written by Tom T. Taylor. So we're going to get three distinct writers with three distinct voices providing all of these stories. So, now that said, I like the notion and I like the concept. Essentially, what we're getting is a 27 issue maxi series.
Right, they're just instead of it being one long story, it's just a
series of vignettes.
Vignettes, yeah.
So, this one I thought was intriguing because this is Qui-Gon Jinn. We don't have a whole lot of Qui-Gon Jinn material. You know, we saw him in the Phantom Menace, but then he died. You know, we've seen you know references, and you know there've been a couple of stories about it, but this is. Essentially, I mean, you know, this is essentially the first sort of Marvel story featuring him. And I would love to see more, a lot, because, you know, I find Qui-Gon Jinn to be very fascinating because he is, you know, he's a consummate Jedi Knight.
But he's a bit of a hippie. He's got his own ideas about things.
And he's a free thinker.
I always liked about him.
He's a free thinker, and I think that's a lot of what we get here in this book, to a certain extent. So anyway, let's start off. As I said, written by Jody Hauser, and this one is called "Star Wars: Age of Republic: Qui-Gon Jinn in Balance." And I like this lead up. Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn has long served the Jedi Council and the Galactic Republic faithfully. But his faith in the Jedi and in the Force is about to be tested. Okay, again, written by Jody Hauser, penciled by Corey Smith, inked by Walden Wong, colors by Java Tartaglia, letters by VC's Travis Lanham. The cover artist is Paolo Rivera.
Really like this cover. I love the way that he's drawn. It's very much looks like Liam Neeson, but it looks slightly younger.
Slightly, yeah, as well as it should be.
Yeah,
there were several variant covers as well. That's going to be one of the big pushes on this maxi series, and of course, you know, those variants were by Corey Smith and Romulo Fajardo Jr., Giuseppe Camuncoli and Ilya Bonetti, who drew the Darth Vader covers. Then, of course, Mike McCode and Guru EFX, and of course, there was also They've also got, you know, like the, you know, the movie variant with the actual still of Qui-Gon. And then there was the one whose name, just the artist just escaped me, Ian McKaig. It's sketches from, you know, the pre-production of The Phantom Menace. You know,
oh, nice.
You know, yeah, it's really cool. And the great thing is, you know, like, for, at least for this issue, Marvel set no guideline to retailers. Like, you have to order like 30 copies of the basic cover to get this one. So you can get, you know, they said, you know, the not preliminary, but the sort of what's the word I'm looking for? I hate getting old.
Previs?
Anyway, those covers, you know, were unlimited. Whether you ordered two copies of the main cover or 100, you still got that variant. And if you can find it, get it. You shouldn't have any problem finding it. Since it was not locked into a certain like 1-to-25 ratio, but it's they're great covers. They're a whole lot of fun. And so that's kind of where we open up here. You know, it's each story is one and done. And we open up with Qui-Gon on a planet called Bryn. And he's deflecting blaster bolts. And you he's know.
There with the Mr. Priestess of Wood.
Yes.
Which I have a hard time not giggling at.
Mistress there. Again, you know, Star Wars and apostrophes.
Yeah. So they're still coming, Master Jedi. He says, yes, Mistress there, I'd noticed that. I'll suggest we keep moving as well. And so he calls to Obi-Wan in the ship, and he says, the Priestess of Wood and I are heading your way, and we're not alone. And he says, it sounds like the negotiations didn't end well. So there's very little middle ground between cutting down a tree and not cutting down a tree. And Mistress there's opposition seems willing to cut down anyone who stands in their way. And so they're surrounded, and for some reason, I'm trying to figure out why Thanos is here causing problems. Does he not look like Thanos?
He does look like Thanos. He does, indeed.
He's purple, and he's wearing gold. He looks like Thanos. They had to know that was going to look like Thanos.
And his troopers kind of look like Skrulls.
Yeah. So... Come on, guys. Really? So...
Well... Star Wars Thanos here is not driving an easy bargain. Your word or your blood, Mr. Thayer. The trees will fall with one or the other. And then, of course, Mr. Thayer is, you think that you can face the might of a Jedi warrior? You and your blasphemy will be... Wait, what are you...
And Qui-Gon Gunn does the Jedi leap that we hadn't seen since The Phantom Menace, before or since. And they get there. He says, I was sent to find a peaceful solution to your people's problems... And this clearly is not a time or place where cooler heads will prevail. And so he deflects every blaster bolt that goes at them as they fly up into the shuttle. And he tells Obi-Wan to take them back to Coruscant. And she says, I can't abandon my trees. And Qui-Gon says,
To the Metal Clan,
that's what they're called. And Qui-Gon says, by your own laws, by their own admission, they need your word or your blood to harm a single leaf. So I have my notes. That's weird. So they can't harm the trees until they have permission or until she dies.
Exactly.
And we're just going to assume that they're going to abide by that law.
Sometimes, Jeff, a retreat can be a thing of beauty.
Where have I heard that before? That sounds awfully familiar. So they take her to Coruscant, and she says, a city of metal, of course. Why have you brought me to this abomination of a world? She's just rude to this guy. I get doesn't understand what's going on, but you did ask for his help, and now you're not going to trust him?
Yeah, and she is, you know, there is no shades of gray with Mistress there. You know, I will be safe when every member of the Metal Clan is dead. Strike them down with your lightsaber. End this conflict. And, of course, Qui-Gon, with the arms clasped in the sleeves, that is not the way of the Jedi, Mistress. But you fought for me. You chose my side. I defended your life, whatever you may think. I had heard the Jedi were great warriors, but running at the first sign of a fight, the legends never hinted at your cowardice. And even Obi-Wan's up front going, ooh, low blow. So
this is interesting because, the next scene is, and I love this, this dusk lighting here. Qui-Gon is talking to Yoda. And he's talking about the fact that there are concerns that I have had for some time. He says, being called a coward isn't what bothered me, Master Yoda. It was being called a great warrior. And he says, Even here in Coruscant, the home of the Jedi Council, there is little understanding of our purpose. We're seen as soldiers, servants of politician, with little mention of the Force itself. And this is something that we even saw a little bit of this in The Phantom Menace. You know, he's concerned with the way the Jedi are being perceived. They're being perceived as warriors, but they're not. They're keepers of the peace. And Yoda, of course, his platitudes, his mysterious the Force remains to many, and misunderstood those who use the Force often are. And Qui-Gon says, and yet our actions are a reflection of our purpose. Perhaps the Jedi Council residing here in the capital is part of the problem. We're used as a weapon of the Republic and are seen as such, perhaps even by ourselves. And of course, Yoda says, on this point, the Council would not agree. Okay, but Qui-Gon has a point. And he says, but of course, be it the Council or myself, I feel there's a loss of vision. And Yoda just, it is, when questions we have a deeper understanding from the Force, we must seek. And Qui-Gon says, of course, on that we agree. But it just seems, just all these platitudes. So Qui-Gon leaves, but doesn't know where he's going. He's just sort of looking for the Force to lead him where he's going. And we've seen Jedi do this. Luke sort of does it when he goes to Dagobah. And he goes to a planet that has no name. And looks a little like Dagobah, so a part of me was wondering, is he going to Dagobah? But he's not. It's a little more tropical and temperate than Dagobah.
Well, it's kind of like the Force has taken him here. You know, it's almost, you know, he let the Force guide him to this world. So, you know, so this is what he thinks. This is what he thinks the Force thinks he needs to be on and to experience. And it's a gorgeous world. I mean, the colors here
are gorgeous. There are several pages in a row that I just have in my notes. Page 16, gorgeous, and 17, and 18, and 19. Because the minute he sets foot, there's this red, like a red soil. The minute he steps on that, he says something feels wrong, cold. There's a corruption here, a darkness. And what were you going to say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because, you know, it's, you know, clearly it's a beautiful world, but it's been infected by something. And, you know, was he brought there, as he asked, you know, was I brought here to stop it or to learn from it? You know, again, it harkens back to that longstanding Jedi tradition of balance.
Right. And so he keeps walking through, and again, starting on page 15, the imagery here is just breathtaking. He says, the Force, it is strong here. The dark side, temptation or a lesson? He says, I seek answers from the living Force. Perhaps even in this dark monument, I'm meant to find the light.
And you have to wonder, because, you know, this is clearly a tree, a dead tree. And if you look at what we saw in Achto.
Right.
Or excuse me, Achto. That's how it's pronounced. You know, again, a tree, a dead tree. And this is, you know, this is where the book gets visually, it's very stunning, you know, because we see, you know,
he sits on what looks like a throne.
He does. And then he goes in, you know, I guess he goes within his mind as part of his meditation. And we see him sitting in the desert. And then we see him serving as sort of almost like an obelisk, if you will, a statue. And then we see the creeping influences of the negative, not the negativity, but, well, you know, perhaps the dark
side. Yeah, the dark side. And grows up into some weeds, and then into some,
you know, some very vicious looking Groot like things.
Yes, that he has to fight off, mm-hmm. And it really is. It's just gorgeous. It's very. It reminds me of, especially page 19, reminds me a lot of some of the stuff you see on Rob Zombie imagery, like on some of his album covers.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Sort of horror-esque, sort of zombie-esque. I really like it. And, you know, he's about to get overtaken by it when he wakes up from it. It's really trippy. And I like it a lot. And I love on this page that he sees, you know, there's a dead Zabrak, a dead Twi'lek, and whatever Kit Fisto is.
Adolin.
Thank you. And another character that I can't tell who that's supposed to be. Maybe it's supposed to be Mace Windu. But he's seeing,
maybe
he's supposed to be his dead friends. And he's slowly getting overtaken by everything. And, you know, he wakes and says, no, just a vision. But what did it? The light found its way in. Balance. But through a means beyond conflict. Violence sows the seeds of the dark side. Unchecked, the Jedi could become that which we fight against. So he sort of found what he was looking for. And he comes back and the mistress...
Or did he?
Yeah, true. And he comes back and he finds the mistress of wood, and she says, I'm attempting to enjoy what little nature this planet has to offer. And Qui-Gon says, there are far more useful places for you to visit during your stay. And she says, what do you mean? He says, the Metal Clan has recruited powerful allies off-world to their cause. You must do the same if the trees are to survive. So this is just more plot. He convinces her to talk to some allies. And she says, I will give your supposed allies a chance to argue their case, but for the sake of my trees, I hope you're right. So I'm going to give them a chance to help me instead of I'm going to go seek out the help that I need. Very entitled attitude this woman has. But I'm a little confused about something here, because Qui-Gon goes back and talks to Yoda, and Yoda says, did you find your answers? And he goes, as often as with the Force, more questions. And I love that Yoda says, good questions are, ask them we must. Certainty in our understanding to arrogance, it leads to the dark side. Which I'm assuming that means, certainty in our understanding leads to arrogance and leads to the dark side. And yeah. Then Qui-Gon says, and yet becoming too rigid is also a risk. The tree that won't bend will snap with the wind. Which is very much in that realm of, you know, only a Sith deals in absolutes that Obi-Wan spoke at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And but then Yoda says, ever present, the dark side is, bend to it, we must not. And so Qui-Gon says, of course not, Master Yoda. The dark side consumes and there is no balance to be found in such a path. And what is our purpose if not balance? And that's the end. Yeah. So I'm not sure what this is supposed to tell us other than Qui-Gon thinks he's found his balance, but I'm not really sure what we learned from it other than we got a really kind of a cool story about Qui-Gon, you know, learning to be a diplomat.
Yeah, and see, and therein lies my critique, is this, once again, we get a prequel trilogy character, but our, you know, he's not, we don't really see him advanced in any way. You know, we don't learn something new. You know, there's no tangential consequence of his actions. It's, you know, it's, this is stuff that, you know, we learn from Qui-Gon during the Phantom Menace, and frankly, you know, I was kind of hoping for a little something more.
Yeah, as was,
don't get me wrong, it's a good solid story,
but as a lead off to this, you know, 20 to this epic
27 issue event, I just
event, yeah,
I wanted something a little more. I wanted you know, you know, because I'm not decrying it, but at the same time, I was left wanting. You know, I needed more. I think, not that I think, I know. I wanted it a little more. I wanted to maybe have some sort of resolution, or, you know, or some sort of, you know, because, you know, we still don't know what's going to go on with Mistress Thera. You know, she's kind of left there.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's, I mean, you know, if we're not going to get the rest
she's
of
left
this
hanging,
story,
she's left hanging in the wind.
Right. If we're not going to get the rest of the story, I don't know. I don't know where this goes. You know, why did we need to take this journey?
Mm, all right.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at. But like I said, not awful, but just not what I was hoping for as a lead off for this series. So I also, it reminded me of something. I don't know if you ever heard this, Matt, when the prequel trilogy was out, there was a theory that Qui-Gon was actually a Sith. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Yeah, there was a theory that he was actually a Sith. And if you go back and watch The Phantom Menace, it actually makes a lot of sense. And so this sort of gave me that sort of feeling, but I don't think that's going to be what it is, and I don't think at all. But it was just kind of interesting because he says, you know, that's what balance is about. So yeah, who knows? I don't know. But so that's going to do it for this week. So we have, what do we have next week for our listeners to read before we discuss?
No, we have a lot coming up, actually. It's good. It's really great. We have Age of Republic, Darth Maul, And I'm really looking forward to this one because based on the previews we've seen for it thus far, which you can find on the Twitter feed on the Facebook page. I mean, he references, it directly references the events of his last miniseries that Cullen Bunn wrote. We have Han Solo, Imperial Cadet number 2, and we have Dr. Aphra number 27. Which is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to this one. And obviously, for those of you who collect the trades, we will not be reviewing this trade, but it is the Star Wars Volume 9, which is collecting the Hope Dies arc.
And we don't need to review it because we've already reviewed it one issue at a time.
Exactly. And once you have read this book, you can go back and re-listen to our thoughts on it.
Exactly. And enjoy them all.
Exactly. There you go.
So that will do it then, I guess, for this edition of Comics with Kenobi. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we will be back next week to discuss all the comics that are printed. I was going to say fit to print, but they've already been printed, so that are printed to fit. I don't know. I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. As always,
I think at this point, by now they haven't printed. They're probably actually they're sitting in some comic book shops right now, probably being prepared to be put out Tuesday for sale on Wednesday.
Well, let's hope. So until next time, then. For Comics with Kenobi, I'm Jeff,
and I'm Matt,
and may the Force be with you
always.
Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy.
Bud, stop peeing!